I'd like to reconvene the June 2009 meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Next item on the agenda is Wade Vaughn, 09-0045. Mr. Stagg.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning, sir.
This is an application from Wade Vaughn to construct a 301-foot-long by 5-foot-wide private non-commercial non-riparian pier to include a 19-by-20-foot L-head, 47 linear feet of 5-foot catwalk pier, and a 17-by-35-foot open-sided boathouse roof with lift. This pier would extend from the applicant's property, which is lot 137 within the Lawns Point on the James subdivision, through an easement over vegetated wetlands owned by the Lawns Point on the James Property Owners Association and into Lawns Creek. The project is in Alpine County. Here's an overview topo map, get you some orientation. Basically, the project is located approximately here along Lawns Creek. This is Lawns Creek and its confluence with the James River. Lawns Creek does mark the boundary between Olive County and Surrey County. This project is on the Olive side. The Lawns Point on the James subdivision basically runs from approximately this area up to approximately here, all the way over to the James River. It's a residential subdivision. Again, the area of marsh that is owned by the Homeowners Association is this area shown as marsh on this map. And the upland lots that border this side of the subdivision basically go down to the sort of the bluff line with the marsh. And they are not riparian lot owners down to the creek itself, except there's, I think, there's one single lot down here that may actually go all the way to the water, south of Mr. Vaughn's application. Located in the same vicinity is the Game and Inland Fisheries Wildlife Management Area. It's the Hog Island Management Area, which consists of three parcels of land, the large parcel to the north of the BEPCO power plant, and two additional tracts called the Carlisle and the Stewart Tract. There is a boat ramp here at the Carlisle Tract, and they actually own this point of land across the creek that borders the Lawns Creek subdivision. Mr. Vaughn's application is upstream of this map, but I wanted to show you this. They are an adjacent property owner to the subdivision and across the creek, and this is a public boat ramp. This is an aerial photograph. It basically encompasses most of the subdivision property. It's slightly cut off here. Mr. Vaughn's application is actually here. Again, this is the marsh area, and the property extends to somewhere approximately in here where the Game and the Fisheries property is. This is the boat ramp at the Carlisle Track. And this was taken as the subdivision was being developed, so some of the roads are in but not completely developed. You may recall this is, most of you I think were on the commission at the time we heard the, this is the area that was mowed by the developer during the sales of these lots and resulted in some impact, considerable impact to the marsh and some of these guts that they drove, what they called a marsh buggy, across and actually had a mower head on it and mowed some of the marsh. And you can actually still see some of the tracks in this photograph. This is an 07 area.
Where's Mr. Vaughn's location?
His pier would be approximately right here.
Okay.
It looks like it's upland down to the creek, but there actually is a small strip of marsh in this area as well. But this is all marsh.
How far is that from the boat ramp?
About 13,000 feet from the mouth of the creek to Mr. Vaughn's.
But I rode
straight as the crow flies, 13,000 feet from the mouth.
No, by road, if he wanted to drive from his lot.
Oh, to the ramp?
To the ramp. How does he cross the creek?
We'd have to go back out to Route 10, which is not even shown on this. But basically, you'd have to take one of these rural roads back out to Route 10, go up to the road that goes down to the power plant. Take a wild guess to say it's probably at least 10 miles. Maybe not such a wild guess, but the creek is approximately 200 to 400 feet through most of the reach that you saw here. There are a few wider areas like this little embayment here and here, but it generally runs, as you can see, it's fairly uniform in its width, 200 to 400 feet approximately. It is relatively deep, and I'll explain a little more of that later within the creek. However, at the mouth, it's pretty shallow. It only has about a 2.7 to 3 foot clearance at low water. Typically, these types of creeks that in river systems like this is what you see. They're often deep inside, but right at the mouth, you have shoaling issues. And that's relevant to our recommendation later. This is a copy of the easement plat. I'll try to explain this to you and give you a little history of generally how we got to this point and then get specific on Mr. Vaughn's application. He is requesting a non-riparian pier with a lift through a common area called open space on this plat, which is this area here. This is Mr. Vaughn's lot, number 137. Originally, when this subdivision was being marketed, it appeared that the developer was marketing these lots as waterfront. I received a number of calls from potential buyers requesting information about the ability to build a private pier out to Long's Creek. Having processed previously a community pier application for the subdivision, which is located here, that's the easement area across the land to get to it, that is constructed, it was permitted, it goes out, as you can see it in this photograph right here, and it just goes out into the water, it has no slips. At the time we were reviewing that for a permit, and I was a staff person, we were led to believe this would be the only pier along Long's Creek because of this common area, and that there would be no private piers because none of these people were riparian property owners. And it was permitted under that. We would typically require, if it was a community pier and there were still private lots, we typically work with the developer to try to get proper so that additional private piers aren't built. And there's one central pier to service, you know, a number of people. Having said that, we eventually met with the county and the developer and attorneys for both the county and the developer to clarify what these lots really were. It was agreed upon after that meeting that these were all water view lots, not waterfront lots, and they should not be marketed as waterfront. Subsequent to that, the developer recorded this plat, which is a two-part plat. This is the upper part of the subdivision, and there's another attachment which you'll see in a minute that's the next section that goes out towards the mouth. The original plat did not have easement lines on it for the subdivision that was approved. This was recorded later in light of the whole issue about whether piers could be built here. This was recorded with these. Each one of these is an easement line to each one of these plats, which would grant the owners of the lots a right to cross the marsh to reach the creek to build a pier. That's a little misleading here because this line is actually the center of the creek, not the shoreline. We believe that the easement that's being granted here by this plat only goes to mean low water, and anything beyond that is state-owned land, which you can't grant an easement over. You would have to grant away some riparian rights, and I'll get into detail about what's been done with Mr. Vaughn's in a second related to that. The county basically took the stand that this was not a change in zoning, so no change was required by the county. This was allowed to be recorded because easements don't require a change in zoning. And the Wetlands Board further determined that since that was the case and these were still open pile private piers, then no wetlands permit would be required. So we are the agency that's looking at these solely. The county is not involved at this point. Now what we attempted to do here, and I give Tony Watkinson some help, he spent a lot of time working on this next set of drawings, is we tried to overlay this plat that you just saw over an aerial photograph to give you a better idea visually of what we're talking about here. This is the subdivision plat, and it's not perfect. You can see the roads off because you have trouble trying to fit these two together at the proper scale, but it generally is reasonably accurate to give you an overview. Again, you can see each easement line through some software. It's kind of hard to see.
Kathy, could you turn the lights off for just a second?
Not going to be a whole lot better with lights off, but you can see we've superimposed what it would look like if every one of these easements eventually had a pier built on it. There are 57 of these easements between this first one here and the end of the property out towards the mouth. This is the first half of it. And obviously the piers might not all look exactly like this, but generally this is how many piers could be built. Now, the developer has argued and their attorney that probably some of these will never be built because they're so long. The longest easement here is over 2,600 feet from the property line out to the center of the creek. But there are some shorter ones, and Mr. Bond is one of those. The project is not protested, and we have not received any objections, but staff believe the number of piers being proposed here through this mechanism is pretty unprecedented, and that we should bring this to the full commission to get your direction on how to treat this first one and any future ones should you deem action is warranted to permit. I'll go to the next slide, which is the northern end. And as you can tell from the slides, the other photographs were oriented north up. These are turned, so north is to the right. Again, the easement lines, and this would be the final easement line. There is one more, I think, lot here that they did not grant an easement to. But the Game and Inland Fisheries property is right in this area. Each easement is 10 feet wide across the marsh. This is the typical easement right here. It's a straight line, 5 feet on either side of that line. So any pier that was built across this open space would have to be fit inside the 10-foot wide easement. And again, here's superimposing a pier structure. This would be the longest one right here. That's the one that's about 2,600 feet long. This is a copy of our oyster ground map, again, to give you kind of the overall perspective. There are oyster ground leases out in the James. There is an oyster ground lease at the mouth that goes up to approximately this location. This project will not impact that. Mr. Vaughn's application is here. Community pier is here. These other little blurbs that you can't read are depths that we took, and I'll explain some of that later. The Game and Inland Fisheries boat ramp is right here. Again, this is Game and Inland's property. This is the subdivision. This is the marsh area. This is basically the marsh line right here. I need light.
Lights, please, Captain.
Yeah, you can turn lights back on.
Thank you.
Again, Mr. Vaughn owns lot 137, and we anticipate that there will be numerous additional requests within the subdivision. A number of the lots have been sold, both on the James and in Launch Creek. And I want to note that the lots that border on James River do go down to the river, so all of those lots would qualify for private piers. But these lots do not qualify by code right to build a private pier, and each one of these would require a permit within Launch Creek. We have received a second application already for lot 140, and we deem that one incomplete at the moment, and this one is the one that we've gotten the information from the applicant to the point that we believe we can bring it to you. We actually received this one first, but I believe this applicant is waiting to provide whatever information is deemed necessary, is similar to this one, to move forward. So this is the one we'll be looking at today, lot 137. Mr. Vaughn was informed that he did not qualify for the permit exemption provided in the code because he is not a riparian owner. There is other land between his lot and the creek itself. And again, this is the center of the creek, not the mean low water line, this line here. But that's the way all the easements are drawn. In order to properly evaluate Mr. Vaughn's request, we requested from him quite a bit of additional information, first about the easement itself and the ownership of the marsh over which the easement was being granted, as well as some information of eventual deed language for the width of any riparian area that was being granted for construction of a pier or boathouse. He did provide that information. The easement language is fairly straightforward by looking at the easement plat. He has been granted a riparian area by the Property Owners Association to construct a pier and boathouse, and it basically reads that it starts 20 feet off of this easement line and goes this way, and 20 feet off of this easement line and goes this way. That's what it's written. So the riparian area he's been granted is fairly large in front of his water view lot. We believe that what's been granted is adequate for the proposed structure that he is proposing. We also requested some water depth information to consider the navigation impacts within this creek to make sure that the pier would not be a hazard to navigation. And he did provide that. He provided some initial information, and we requested that he provide depths all the way across the creek, which he later provided, and there's a drawing in here reflecting that. Again, that's the general alignment of his pier. Again, the typical easement of a lot across the upland is 10 feet. Now specifically, this is his application drawings. And so you understand what we're talking about. This is all upland property of Mr. Vaughn to this point right here. This is the easement line across the marsh. And this is actually the upland easement area right here, approximately, from his property to mean low water, which is in this location. Then the additional encroachment would be over state-owned land. Again, he was granted a riparian area which is well beyond the footprint of this, out to navigable water. We initially looked at this and don't believe the current design really constitutes a navigation hazard per se. However, there's been no pierhead line established in this creek, and I'll discuss that a little more in detail in a moment. Again, boathouse, typical construction. Again, we're basically talking about just this area. This is the state jurisdiction area from mean low water out. And here's the typical views of the pier, boathouse construction. Basically just a pier with a L-head, boathouse with catwalk pier. This was the initial drawing he provided. It gave us some depth information. Basically, this would be a step down from the upland across the marsh, a step down again, and with a finger pier that was a further step down. I don't want you to get too hung up on this because the elevations don't really match typically what we look at for mean low water being somewhere at or about zero. And he's got it shown at about 4.5 feet. But basically, the tide range here is between the mean high, the mean low is 2 feet, which you need to keep in mind. This was a more extensive drawing he provided later when we requested depths all the way across the creek. Again, the depths are a little bit confusing because this is shown as minus 10, which would mean mean high water was actually about minus 1, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but you can do the ratios between them. This would be the end of the pier. Using his data, it looks like you've got about, interpolating it back to real mean low water, you've got about minus 12 feet at the end of the pier as currently proposed. Now back to the mouth of the creek and the shoaling issue, because this is germane to our recommendation, our secondary recommendation. Engineering surveying department went out and took some water depths here extensively at the mouth and a number of spot elevations all the way across up the creek. The controlling depth at the mouth, this is the most shallow spot we found, which was 2.7 clearance at mean low water. Goes to 3.7, but remains relatively shallow for a good ways out into the James. And there does appear to be a sort of a little deep slough, deeper slough here. And then once you get in the creek proper, the depths range anywhere from 10, 11 feet up to where the applicant's property is actually 22 to 24 feet deep hole in the bend there, which I'll show you in a moment. Again, now we've moved all the way up to Mr. Vaughn's project, up the creek. Again, this is the location of the community pier where we took some additional depths. It was a maximum depth of 20 feet there. However, the community pier just barely clears the marsh. It has an L head on it, and you can't tie a boat up at it. It's fairly deep, but it's really built almost as a marginal wharf right against the bank. Again, this would be the location of the Vaughn's pier. This is a little closer view of that same. These are the corrected depths to actual mean low water that the engineering surveying department calculated. And as you can see, it does get deep rather quickly. And there is a pretty deep hole right in this area here.
you'll see later in the aerial photograph. The end of his pier, as currently proposed, is approximately right here, minus 12. A couple of aerials. Again, now you're looking, this is the mothball fleet out in the James. This is the mouth of the creek. This would be the approximate location of Mr. Vaughn's pier in this large bend here. Creek goes back out, has a number of switchbacks, eventually goes out to the mouth. A little closer view. Again, his pier would be approximate in this location. Since we received no objections from any property owners, we did not receive any objections from adjacent property owners or the public at large. Other agencies that have commented, Department of Conservation and Recreation did provide comments but does not object, provided certain criteria of the Chesapeake Preservation Act are followed. In your shoreline permit application report, BIM states that the preferred approach from an integrated marine environmental viewpoint would be the construction of community piers that would serve multiple users. They also note that the proposed pier is from a non-riparian property. As noted earlier, we did issue a permit for a community pier along this reach of shoreline, and it has been constructed. BIMS goes on to say the less preferred approach, in the event a private pier to serve a non-riparian property can be justified, is that the location of the pier should be made where there is little or no vegetation and ensure that the pier is a proper height so that any vegetative wetlands the shading impact is reduced. Game and Inland Fisheries was notified as both sister agency and as a joint property owner and did not comment. Again, no wetlands permit is required by the county. They believe this to be an open pile structure that's exempt from the wetlands ordinance. Let me stop there. So, the summary and recommendation. Staff normally recommends developers agree to deed restrictions to prevent private piers and subdivisions when they seek a community use pier. However, in this instance, given the fact that the marsh was a common area and the lots did not extend to mean low water, staff was initially led to believe that the only pier that would be constructed within Long Creek would be the sole community pier that is currently exists. As such, and with no slip space provided, no such language was requested from the developer. Once it was discovered that the lots were being marketed as waterfront and then subsequently as water view, with the right to construct individual piers through easements, staff recognized pier density that could eventually result from numerous piers within Long Creek. We requested information from the current applicant so that any commission decision on both this and any future applications would be consistent. Because of the way the easement lines have been oriented, staff anticipates conflicts with future requests related to the granting of adequate riparian area to accommodate structures that may be proposed. Additionally, since the width of Launch Creek is relatively narrow, since the channel area is variable in its relationship to the shoreline, and since the mouth of the creek tends to have shoaling issues, staff believes any approval of piers along this shoreline should be carefully considered. Full consideration of potential impacts pursuant to the Code of Virginia are warranted. We believe these include, but are not exclusive to, additional congestion in the waterway, possible conflicts of use with the wildlife management area ramp, wetland impacts, sedimentation due to construction and increased boating activity, and navigation restrictions resulting from up to 57 piers being built along approximately 13,000 linear feet of creek, and other impacts from boats to include contaminants from oil and fuel discharge, as well as a change in the character of this basically undeveloped nature of the waterway. In addition, there is an oyster ground lease in the creek that could eventually be affected by the construction of 57 individual piers. In fact, the degree to which such types of impacts are acknowledged has been highlighted in a NOAA publication entitled The Environmental and Aesthetic Impacts for Small Docks and Piers, which is a workshop report, which I do have a copy of.
It's pretty long, so if anyone would like to refer to it.
It does cover a number of those impacts that I just noted. In light of the foregoing, and since staff does not believe an easement grants any inherent right for a pier, as would an actual riparian ownership, we recommend denial of the pier in the boathouse. While there may be some areas along the Lawrence Creek shoreline where private piers might be considered reasonable. Staff believes it's incumbent upon the developer, in this instance, to identify reasonable locations and numbers of piers for these lots. We feel that the number is substantially less than the 57 proposed. I think it says 55 there in your email, but that's a typo. As an alternate recommendation, should you deem that this does warrant approval and that we have provided you with the adequate information you need to evaluate it, we would recommend that a private pier headline be established for Lawrence Creek, and that Mr. Vaughn's pier and any future pier that is permitted adhere to this pier headline. Staff recommends that such pier headline be established at the minus 5.0 at mean low water line, and that's based on the mouth being approximately 3 feet at mean low water, which would give an additional 2 foot clearance. We believe this would self-limit the size of boat that might use this. While the creek itself is very deep, the problem will be is getting in and out of the creek at low tide, and the future probable dredge requests we may get if you start permitting piers in here to deeper than minus five at mean low. Or if no more than a third of the way across the waterway, which is our typical remedy, whichever is less, either minus five or a third of the way. In light of this alternate recommendation, we would recommend that if approved, Mr. Vaughn's pier not extend beyond that minus 5 foot line. The impact of Mr. Vaughn is as currently proposed, it would mean he would have to either realign his alignment of the pier or pull it shoreward of his current location. I believe he'll have some comments related to that as to how that's going to impact what he's currently designed. We would recommend that basically one alternative, currently his pier goes straight out once it hits the easement. Here's the deep hole that I was referring to. You can clearly see it in the photographs. It's very deep in this area. He currently is extending it straight out and really would probably go out to about 12 feet, which is, this is give or take, approximately here. Our recommendation would be to actually turn either at the end or at the beginning of the end of the easement at mean low water, the pier alignment, so that it more clearly lines up with the deep area here instead of going straight into it. Therefore, we could take advantage of the deeper area and get the full five, close to the full 5 feet within its slip, versus now where the stern end, if you go bow in, would be at 5 feet under our recommendation if he pulled it back, but the bow would be very, very shallow water. Based on that alternate recommendation, we would suggest some alternate alignment of the pier, and that he provide drawings reflecting that to show that it would not, none of the pier structure itself would go beyond the 5 foot. And this would not, with this alignment, would not prohibit him from mooring the boat on the offshore side of that structure, which would clearly be deeper than 5 feet if it was built out to 5 feet, either with whips or temporarily at a low tide if he needed to move the boat into the slip later as a tide boat. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Stagg. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One question, Ben. You've got the slide up there. Earlier you had a slide that had 57 piers, hypothetical drawings, I guess, of 57 piers. And I think you're pointing to the potential for cumulative impact.
Yes.
In raising this issue. And I just wanted to know, staff, if we have any similar cases where we've had relatively small areas or small creeks where cumulative impacts have subsequently been documented and been problematic, in other words, impacts to shellfish closures or other ecological impacts.
You know, I've been here since 83. I don't recall an application with this many piers in this close of proximity. So I don't know that we have any data to say, you know, that we address that issue specifically. I think this case has raised that issue. And know, there is an argument that some of these would never be built because they're too long. However, in Alloway County, in a subdivision of similar nature as this, Gavin Point, None of the piers would be this close together, but there are a number of piers there that have been built of this length, over 2,000 feet across the marsh. Now, those people own the marsh. So by right, by code, they had the right to peer out and navigate the water and to get them and cross the marsh. There are a few of those that are as close as 20-25 feet of each other. But again, a lot of them haven't been built. But our theory is it may take years for all of these to be built, but there is the potential that virtually all of these could eventually be constructed. And is this the kind of density that the commission really anticipates for a permitted structure? These are not by right because they're not riparian owners. And we believe there was a better mechanism to do this up front, and there still might be a better mechanism to do this with the one community pier, or maybe one or two more community piers within Lawrence Creek that numerous lot owners could jointly use that would be fairly close to their property. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, just to follow up, how far away is the current community pier from this location?
Guess, but 13,000 feet straight up the creek from the mouth, so I would guess right there it's probably 800 to 1,000 feet. Maybe.
Mr. Tankard?
You mentioned in your summary and recommendation the potential impacts pursuant to 28.2-1205. So what you're saying is that, as I understand, all 57 piers would be over tidal wetlands. Is that correct?
Yes. And the other complicating factor, but this case is not one, and even the other application, but as you can see in this drawing, some of these will be bridges if they're built. There is water in these guts of so they are jurisdictional subaqueous land. This is some of the same areas that were driven across with the mowing incident that we took jurisdiction as the agency. So, then you've got to worry about additional, where's the piles going to go? We have to make sure they don't put the piles right in the gut because people may want to kayak and canoe up these. So you've just got a myriad of issues.
Follow-up question.
Mr. Tankard.
In the, any public benefit to this private use of wetlands?
Not that we can see.
Okay.
Further questions, Mr. Schick?
So you did say that there, in this area that there are piers that as long as some of the longest...
Well, in Alloway County, not in this area. There are a few piers in this creek
right.
on the opposite side. Most of the ones on the opposite side, the marsh is not extensive.
Right.
The tree line comes almost down. And almost all of them are just built to get to 5 or 6 feet of water.
But within the same county, there are
yes.
piers that are left.
Yes.
So it's not far-fetched to say that any one of these lots that have this long
right.
would want to do this.
Would want to do it.
Right.
So it's a matter of money.
Right. So it's not that... All 57 of them wouldn't be built. It's just that they could be built, and any one of them could be built, and over the next 20 years, possibly all of them
right.
could be built.
And as you can see with the easement drawings, some of those easement lines are pretty close together. And we foresee when the homeowners association starts trying to grant the riparian area out in the creek, which is state's jurisdiction. How's it going to work when they've already granted a 40 or a 50-foot wide riparian area to someone whose neighbor has an easement that's only 15 or 20 feet away? Have they already granted away the riparian area for that easement? But it's going to be done on an individual one-by-one basis. The only lines that are currently established is the easement. No riparian areas have been allocated except Mr. Collins.
Mr. Fox?
Can you... tell us again what the staff was told when the community pier was under consideration.
When I was on site reviewing this with the Army Corps, the county, the developer, representatives of the developer, that was a specific question that I asked about this pier. And they indicated that there wouldn't be private piers. And you have to know the history of this development. When we had the marsh mowing incident, basically we were told that the whole group of people that were managing the property at the time were fired after that incident. But clearly that was what was indicated to me, that
they, you know, there would be no, because it was discussed that these, none of these lots went to the creek. In subsequent conversations with the developer and their attorney, they indicated, and if you look at the covenants that were approved by the county for the subdivision, it does appear to indicate that they, there was some thought of granting people the rights to build piers here. So I can't say that that wasn't their intent from the very beginning. I'm not sure the county understood that, the Board of Supervisors, when they approved it, but you know, that was many years ago. But clearly that's been their argument. Our argument was, well, if that was the intent, then you should have recorded that easement plat as part of the original approval. That was done much later, once this whole issue of whether piers could be built here. They recorded a whole new plat at the county that, that put these easement lines on it, because otherwise we had no clue how this was even going to be done. There was no established criteria other than the covenant seemed to indicate that these people might have some right to build a pier.
We were given to believe that there would be no private piers.
I have no qualms telling you that that's what I was led to believe.
But yes. We did not add the condition that we sometimes add.
No, and the reason was because none of these were riparian lots. You know,
yeah.
We didn't see any need to put covenants in saying they couldn't build private piers when they, by code, they didn't have any right to build them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Schick?
So the people that are on site with you at that time were part of that management team that was fired?
That's my understanding. I don't think any of those people are still there.
Okay, so the actual ownership of the group was not involved with that conversation.
They were representatives of the...
Right, they're just the representatives, right.
They have legal counsel here that might be able to clear that up for us, Mr. Schick, I'm hoping. Mr. Lane?
You said that the water depth at the mouth of the creek, mean low water, 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Looked in that Exhibit 12-1, it appears from that that the water depth is actually 2 feet. How did you determine the 3 foot water depth?
Let me get on the same page with you here.
12 water.
Well, that is a topo map, and you know, generally it's between 2 and 3. We actually took depth 3.
You actually took sound.
Yes, we did cross sections with GPS and a depth finder. Actually, every one of these lines is a real time depth. Every one of those readings, we took an actual reading with GPS to locate us geographically where we were, and a depth reading at the same simultaneously that we calculated, that we're going to calculate. Then we had to go back and interpolate the actual real mean low water based on, because we weren't there right at mean low water. It took us, you know, a couple hours to do the whole thing. But we ratioed all of that to get this. So this is all, you know, I can't say that it's not all pretensive to, because you never get it so accurate, but which is why we erred on the, in the favor of the applicant, and it, really we had consistent 2.7 foot readings in this most shallow area at low tide. So we just basically said 3 feet is the controlling depth here in the mouth. Now you may hear an argument that, you know, you've got a boat ramp here and people going in and out of this mouth of this creek all the time. They are. But I've been at this boat ramp many times, and I don't think you'll see many boats of any large stature. They're all trailer boats. You know, a lot of open outboard motor boats, you know, a few inboards, but nobody brings a real large boat that I've ever seen down to this boat ramp and has to launch it here. Unless, I guess, they're coming, you know, they know they're going to come to go at high tide.
Further questions? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at the photographs, this appears to be a fairly high quality, relatively unimpacted area, notwithstanding the previous history in the, with the developer. Is that a fair assessment?
The whole area is fairly undeveloped. You've got the wildlife management area. You do have a few residences upstream of the wildlife management area on the Surrey side, and there's between the mouth and Mr. Vaughn's, there's probably 4 piers maybe on the Surrey side, and then there's a few upstream on both sides. But relatively, it's very rural.
enterprise.
Further comment? Thank you. Is the applicant present or represented?
Do you want any of these or just?
No, I've got mine.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
If you raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. State your name for the record, please.
Wade Vaughn. Thank you for hearing me. My case today, as I said, my name is Wade Vaughn. I'm the owner of Lot 137. I'm the one that have prepared the documents and submitted the plans that you, I believe, have in front of you today. My objective today is try to explain my perspective of the application. Late Friday afternoon, I received feedback from Ben on the staff position. I got the report yesterday morning, so I made an attempt to give you a quick update. Not totally familiar with all the details, but I think I have enough to enhance my position. My objective today is, upon review of this information, hopefully get your approval to install my specific pier at my location as submitted. Again, I would ask, I know there's a number of conversations about other elements, history, one thing another. I'm not sure those relate to me. I'm looking for one specific situation at Lot 137. A couple of things. I try to do this in the same order that the staff report is listed in. Just as a clarification, I may be using some wrong language here, but there were some terms of a 301 foot of pier. The reality is the last 62 feet in your report you'll see is actually access to that upland interface. So the reality is it's probably closer to 258 feet just for conversation, just so we're all on the same sheet of music. I also prepared a general overview. This is very similar to what Ben has prepared. The objective here was to highlight where the specifically my lot was. This is fairly much to scale. It also shows the interface at the property line. The pier that I show there is in alignment with the easements. When I made my purchase, I was shown the easements, the alignments. It appeared to me they were all set up in such a way so there would be no conflicts. As a clarification, I also understand based on the information I received in my easement, I have a 20-foot either side of the center line, and my understanding is that would be the same criteria that would apply to just about everyone else who was to apply for a pier along the easement. As Mr. Stagg mentioned, the installation, I was very specific about my purchase, about my design here to satisfy some of the criteria that I understood. One of them was this section of the channel. It's about 400 feet across from my property line between mean high water and mean high water. My pier extends just short of 100 feet. It's about 95 feet, so I would be within a quarter of the channel width. In addition to that, I don't exceed the 300 foot of pier from the mean high water. In addition, Mr. Detstag mentioned the relationship of the common property. We're talking there's about a 25 foot section of common property that I currently have an easement with the homeowners association to traverse that to mean low water. The subject of oyster leases came up and traveling in and about those. Currently, as Mr. Stagg mentioned, my property is right down here at this end. The oyster lease section is at the mouth. There's a section of oyster lease up here and, of course, down the face of the James. This section right down in here, we see a very similar situation where there were piers adjacent to oyster leases as far as boat traffic in the area. Mr. Stagg did mention that the wildlife management ramp is here, which probably at this point is creating the greatest amount of traffic through that area. I'm not sure if that is a significant factor, but it's surely something that has been going on and will continue to go on with any development, specifically on the James River side. One of the other documents that was referenced in the report was the VINS report. I'd like to clarify a few things. My interpretation after some discussion with the VINS staff yesterday was that in my specific case, the report reflects that I have no permanent fill areas. I'm not creating any permanent changes to the environment. Mine are all impact areas or temporary during just construction. During their calculations, they did make an error that they brought to my attention yesterday. The actual 1255, they reduced it to 1079. This is just in conversation with them yesterday. They made an error, and I don't think they passed it on to Mr. Stagg yet, or they may have. It's a minor area, but the point being, the corrected non-permanent area is still just above 1,000 square feet. In their report, as Mr. Stagg mentioned, there were several things detailed. One of them was that the actual installation of the structure could be an advantage to some of the habitat living in that area. They also did mention the issue of shading, but they also confirmed that this can be mitigated by installing the top of the walkway at or above 4 feet, which is in compliance with my design. The issue of pierhead line and length, at this point, there is no current navigation and or pierhead criteria established in Lawns Creek, as I understand it. The established criteria, as outlined in the code, is really set up so that it can be established through maintaining a quarter of the width of the channel and or the maximum 300 foot from the mean high water. In my case, I've satisfied both of those. The depth of the pier, depth of pierhead is determined by the above two criteria and really not the anything with the channel bottom. The discussion of the minus 5 foot depth at pierhead, this is new criteria. I was not aware of this. When I made my purchase, I was very specific. I did research in advance of the purchase to confirm the channel width, confirm the depth of the depth of the channel in that area, to make sure that I could satisfy the Code of Virginia requirements in my pier installation. The new criteria clearly will have a severe impact on my design, as I will show you in just a moment, and also establishing that minus 5 will clearly be a non-uniform approach to other potential pier installations. In a situation where you had the pier drop off or the grade drop off very quickly, you could have a pier dropped off in 5 feet, you could have only be limited to 5 foot of pier. In a situation where you had a very shallow bottom that went to the 5 foot, it could be a longer pier. In my case, that would be a very detrimental situation. So as I mentioned earlier, the new proposed depth criteria will clearly impact my specific situation and where I try to maintain and follow the guidelines outlined. And as I'll show you here, Ben's picture was a little bit clearer. The same picture is a little bit bigger, but that's the channel bottom. This is a specific a section of that, and as you can see, if we maintain the minus 5 criteria, where that intersects my potential 35-foot of pier, they'll probably make it about 12-foot maximum, essentially rendering the pier and deck area basically useless. So the other issue that that I think that was made clear by Mr. Stagg was that at this point, we have not determined that this would be any type of navigational issue. And I think we're in general agreement that in my specific location, this installation, we're basically discussing a 20-foot difference in pier alignment from what I'm proposed compared to what the impact of that minus 5 foot elevation would do to the installation. And once again, not impacting any potential navigation issues in the channel. There was also some conversation about the potential 57 piers. In this case, as I understand it, I am one of two applicants to date of the potential 57, and that's been over the about last 3 years. I think homes have, or lots have been sold out there for over 3 years. I think it, I'd ask that we keep in mind the possibility of something happening versus the actual situation here. And if there was such interest, all of those properties, there's 155 properties out there, of which 140 have transferred ownership at this point. And over that three-year period, we've only had two applications submitted, which is this is one of the two. So to suggest that a denial or any question about the viability of my specific location based on the potential of others, where at this point we've only received two applications, I'd ask that to be considered as well.
How many homes are presently built or under construction at development?
There are two. The second home was just occupied 2 months ago. But all the properties with exception of about three on that side of the channel have been transferred to private ownership. Also, in reference to the, there was two questions that came up earlier in the discussion, one about access to the pier over in the wildlife game. As Mr. Stagg mentioned, you'd have to leave the subdivision, go out, and I would bet it's every bit of 10 miles to get around to it. And the other question about the common pier. Common pier, the picture doesn't really do it justice, but it's basically just a walkway with a small pier head on it, and there's really no opportunity for anyone to even consider any type of permanent mooring operation for any type of craft. The issue about size of craft, I respect the concern, but I think that there are craft that come off that ramp and use that area on a regular basis. That would be limited to my own desire on the size of craft. As you can see by my layout, I have no expectation and no desire to have any type of extremely large vessel. I'm looking for a small pleasure craft at best, and with 3 foot of draft, I can get plenty of craft through there that would satisfy my needs. So I'm not sure exactly how that plays or why that is a significant issue in my application. That's clearly up to my perspective, my decision on what I would want to do there. So in closing, I would ask that you consider these things. In my specific case, I'm looking at my location, not any others. I don't have history with the city or with Isle of Wight as far as issues, the grass that was mowed, things. Those are history beyond my influence. I followed the letter of the law. As you can see, I spent a great deal of time and effort to research the issue in advance, expecting that it be treated fairly, and that the issue of passing through or gaining an easement would not be the basis for any type of rejection, as I understand that is a common practice and has been done in the past. So as far as I'm, from my perspective, I believe I've satisfied all the necessary requirements and would ask that I do not get forced into a redesign or some alternate turn in the pier. It really wasn't shown there, but the reality is that type of orientation would lead me into actually a shallower area, and I have studied that. I spent a great deal of time of looking for the most efficient installation that would not impact the pristine environment, which it is, and that's exactly why I want to live there and be a good citizen in my installation and my use of the creek. So as the custodians of that, I would ask for your permission to allow me to install my pier as designed.
Any questions of Mr. Vaughn? Mr. Tanker?
In your testimony just now, you mentioned that you could cite incidences of private piers crossing or serving non-riparian property.
Correct. I can provide those. I actually do not have. I can compare it.
Fine.
There's one example.
I'll make that full disclosure. Yeah. There are a number of situations in Isle of Wight County, specifically in Smithfield, where I'm more familiar. There was a time where one gentleman owned the marsh that ran from the Smithfield Station Bridge all the way to the property that I owned. And I when I was doing some research, I went and asked the gentleman that owned it, would it be possible to get an easement across there, because I was told that's how needed to be done. And in the course of doing that research, I was wondering, why would people just sell the upland and not go down and sell the marsh with it? Well, back in the old days, trapping rights were so valuable that they sold the upland and kept the marsh for the trapping. So, you know, as a full, another full disclosure, we've got probably from my house to the Smithfield Station Bridge no less than a dozen piers that were initially erected on deeded easements. So that's...
Thank you.
Mr. Holland?
This is a deeded easement for in perpetuity. If they had sold you the 10 feet, then you would have it by right.
You need to ask this gentleman that.
Rather than giving an easement, if they had sold him the 10 feet, then he would have the right by right to put it up. So the only thing today is he's got a deeded easement rather than a deed.
I was going to distill some of that after we finished hearing everything, but I think. Anyone else have any questions, Mr. Ballin?
I have a question.
Yes, Dr. McConaughey.
So I'm clear. You bought your property after the easements had been established?
Yes, they were actually in the process of being established. They told me that I would have an easement, I would get an easement. And as I understand it, Mr. Riddick may have some more details on the timing. Was that the establishment of the easements and the alignment was to protect adjacent homeowners from conflicts in trying to get there first. So everybody knew going in where your alignment was going to be, what the width of that easement was, and there was some clarity brought in the actual easement document as far as the width, and it's consistent with my pier head and slip, which I think is approximately, I'm allowed 20, 23 feet on either side of the center line of that easement.
Further questions? Council wish to be heard?
Please.
Mr. Reddick?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for your presentation.
Thanks for giving me a spot here.
For the record, just state your name, please.
Commissioner and members of the commission, my name is William Riddick. I'm an attorney from Smithfield, and I represent the original developer, Virginia Timberline, LLC, and the Homeowners Association, which is the record owner of the marsh. And I'd just like to say that if I've been involved in this from the very beginning, before they ever started making application for rezoning with Isle of Wight County, and it was never the applicant's intention to be anything other than a good steward of this property and to do things in such a way that would be respectful of the land. Just very briefly, this is a very high-quality subdivision, and going through the zoning process, they made use of the county's ordinances so as to preserve over almost 1,000 acres of this tract of land in open space, of which a lot of the marsh was included. And so the design of this subdivision was done in such a way to maximize the open space. I've had an opportunity to read your staff report here, and first of all, I'd say that please don't hold Mr. Vaughn responsible for what happened years ago with that grass mowing incident. That happened a long time ago. They took their lumps. They dealt with an unscrupulous contractor, and they did some bad things, and y'all sanctioned them for it, and they paid their fine. And please don't hold Mr. Vaughn responsible for that, because he's made it. This is his application, but we're here in support of that application. I would say that the purpose of doing what we've done was to give you greater control rather than less control. The staff report said that had we simply platted all these lots out to mean low water, these would all be incidents of piers by right. What you have is an opportunity to review each and every application on its merits, and I think that's a great benefit to the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. We have included in deeds and sales materials to the property owners that they have the right to make an application to the VMRC for a pier, but not the right to have one, that they would have to comply with your regulations, and that each application would be considered on a case-by-case basis. I listened to what Mr. Stagg had said, and a lot of it I don't really recall in the way that he does, and I guess it just depends on where you stand as to how you perceive things. But These plats, this plat that you see right here, that was done, the first one and then this subsequent revised one, was done in response to conversations with staff about the conflict issue. Where are these easements potentially going to go? And so we prepared these plats so that it would prohibit potential conflicts in the event that people wanted to erect piers on Lawrence Point. I have to go back and say piers on Lawrence Point were always part of the original proposal as originally conceived by the developer. We did have a meeting with staff. They came to Alloway County. We sat down with the county attorney and the county staff, and we went through all the documents. And it was abundantly clear that from the very beginning, piers were anticipated to be constructed on Lawrence Point, on Lawrence Creek. There are documents that have been accepted by the county and approved by the county attorney that specifically deal with the issue of piers on Lawrence Point. So at no point was anyone hiding anything. It was fully discussed. The community pier was part of a request by the county in the rezoning process so that perhaps it would lessen the request of piers on Lawrence Creek, and I think that's probably what's going to happen to some great degree. But we believe that each of these applications should be considered on their own merits. Mr. Vaughn is at a point on Lawrence Creek that has the shortest run across the marsh. Economics are going to dictate who builds a pier here. Staff has said that there's a potential of 57 piers here. Well, there's only been one easement that has been granted by the homeowners association across that marsh, and that's to Mr. Vaughn. He's the only one that's gone that far. The recordation of a plat does not in and of itself create an easement. There has to be a subsequent document that conveys an easement to the property owner, and the only one that's been granted is Mr. Vaughn because he's the only one that's asked for it. We would anticipate that most of these lots on Lawrence Creek would not be the subject of a pier application because of the fact that there is, in many cases, spans of more than 1,000 feet across the marshland in order to get to mean low water. I was talking to Mr. Livengood, who's a pier builder in Alloway County and all over this area, and the longest pier that he could recollect in Alloway County is 900 feet. And so I'm certainly, you know, anybody with an unlimited budget can build anything they want to, but the likelihood is very slim that that would happen. We have been trying to work with Mr. Vaughn and staff to respond to their request with respect to this application in a timely fashion. Everything that's been done has been done in consultation with Mr. Vaughn and with staff. There's a deed of easement that was granted to Mr. Vaughn for his easement and the riparian rights. I prepared the deed and sent it to staff for review. The language in the deed dealing with the riparian rights was modified to satisfy your staff. So the indication I got from a lot of what was going on here was that we were acting in some rogue fashion, and that's really not the case at all. We've tried to cooperate with staff from the very beginning. I'm happy Mr. Bowman brought up the issue of the creation of the erection of piers over easements, because it is a common thing in Alloway County. It's happened, and I knew from the very beginning that the commission had approved pier applications over easements and had been doing so for many years, although another staff person had told me that it had never happened. I knew for a fact that it had. We believe that what you have here is a better situation than you could have had, and that would be 57 piers by right. All we're asking you to do is act on Mr. Vaughn's application as you would with any other private citizen who came in here and made a similar application. Y'all consider these all the time, and what he's asking for here is not unusual, it is not unreasonable, and it doesn't lead to the automatic decision that you will grant 56 additional permits for piers on Lawrence Creek. That's not what's being considered here. All you're considering is his application for a pier on Lawrence Creek. These plats, if there's a problem with those, we're happy to vacate them. we'll do whatever the Virginia Marine Resources Commission says is the best thing to do to make your job easier in regulating this. We put this to record because that's the direction we got from staff. We understood you didn't want you wanted to know where the piers were going to be, and that there wouldn't be conflict in the future if other people were to come in and make application for piers. So we're trying to be proactive and cooperative with your staff and with the commission to make your job easier. But I would submit to you that you have a better situation here than you could have had we've been really devious about this thing and just platted all the lots to mean low water. You wouldn't have any say-so. In this instance, you're going to look at these on a case-by-case basis, and in doing so, you ought to look at the merits of each application as it stands based on the location of the lot, its proximity to the mean low water, and all the other factors that you take into consideration routinely when you consider other applications. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Riddick, Mr. Tigard?
I just want to explore a little bit what you mentioned is this is a better situation. The community pier that's already there,
yes, sir.
And will that, are interior lots served by that community
pier? There are some interior, yes, sir. There are interior lots that, they're not a large number of interior lots, but there are some. And that was one of the concerns of the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors is that this is a very unique piece of property. We should make it available to everybody that lives there.
I drove it the other day. It's the first time I'd been in there, and I swear it's so big you can get lost in it. So do you know the number of lots that are actually in there?
It's 155.
Seems like it's 1,000. It's that big.
It is a spectacular piece of property. It really is.
I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying that I thought I was under the impression when you asked about upland property owners. Certainly there are some, based on the street configurations that I saw, that do not have the benefit of enjoyment of the water that this community pier would provide. Further questions of Mr. Riddick? Thank you, Mr. Riddick.
Thank you.
Anyone else? What I'll do is I'll let you rebut if there is any opposition. Is there anybody else in support of the project? Is there anyone in opposition to the project? Mr. Bond, you've got 2 minutes to wrap up.
Just quickly, I just want to make sure I make clear in my specific situation, I'm asking for approval of my submitted plan. The deviation there is we're talking roughly about 20 feet off the end, which would require complete redesign. So I'm asking in that section to maintain my design.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one follow-up question for Ben, if I can. And that is just, Ben, if you don't mind clarifying for the record, you had said earlier that I believe you were in a meeting on site with the representatives of the developer, and this was related to the application for the community pier.
Yes.
And you were led to believe that private docks would not be constructed in Longs Creek as part of that meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. And I don't refute what Bill Riddick said, that it's in the original covenants that were apparently adopted by the county, that there was some implication that piers might be allowed here. But clearly, I didn't have that covenant document, and they indicated to me at the time that this would be the only pier.
Right. The problem that I've got with that track of thought is there have been times where the commission has authorized community piers, but in issuing the permit for the community pier, we put specific restrictions in that permit that prohibited other piers from being built. I don't mean anything wrong because I'm the agency head and the staff is my staff, but in this situation, we presumed that because of the open space and because of the distance, that there would not be any piers built. Therefore, we didn't put a restriction in the community pier when it was permitted. So that's something that I got to be straight up. That causes me a little bit of concern. Comments from the commission, Mr. Schick.
I do believe that if they had said that, you know, and provided the covenants at that time, that this issue would be a lot different. So I really think that. The misconception that was given to this commission does reflect on our decision today. If we had known that the covenants and the plan was always to have piers possible into this cove, it would be reflected differently by our view, because this is a pristine area. In the past, we have allowed docks to go over areas. Now, I don't recall in the last 5 or 6 years that I've been involved that we've ever taken a pristine area like such a large area like this and then allowed the community development to basically, you know, give a wholesale options to be able to have piers like this. So this is a unique situation. And, you know, it only starts with one pier. So, yes, you know, we do have to look at this on an individual basis. But this is the first pier. Then all of a sudden, 20 years down the line, you know, we have a lot more houses there. 30 years down the line, we have a lot more houses. That is the problem with the entire Chesapeake Bay is, you know, John Smith was just, you know, three boats, you know. An Indian thought, hey, these are just a couple guys here. But, you know, now we're looking at the entire bay as being, you know, being poisoned by our own development. When you have riparian rights, we have the we don't have the option to say no, because riparian rights are granted because of the nature of our laws and the public trust doctrine. We have to save what we can save. This is an opportunity for us to be able to say, yes, this is an area that's going to stay pristine, because we're not going to allow the possibility of 57, 25, whatever docks that may occur. And this might be one oyster ground that's down the way that won't be condemned because we have stopped the possibility of development of non-riparian right docks. That's my opinion.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Several issues related to the history of the development of this project have come up. One of them relates to the marsh mowing incident, and I agree with the applicant that doesn't have any bearing on this case and shouldn't be taken into consideration at all. The other relates to the issue, I think, of cumulative impacts and what we just discussed about which facts were presented at the time the community pier was approved, and had we had the benefit of those documents at the time, we might have required, or at least had the opportunity to require as a condition of the establishment of that community pier permit some additional prohibitions, but that wasn't done. But in this case, I think it is appropriate to consider the potential cumulative impacts to the extent that this will be a precedent-setting case. This is a single application. It stands on its own 2 feet. But clearly, if we permit this, we are establishing a precedent for additional piers to go into this creek. And I think it is a pristine area. It's a relatively unimpacted, high-quality estuarine environment. And I think VIMS is on the right track and staff when they say that a community peer type approach is the preferable way to develop and allow access to the waterfront of the area. So I think they're on the right track with that position.
Mr. Tiger?
Similarly, I agree that the cumulative effects will be substantial. We're adjacent to wildlife management areas. We're adjacent to public boat ramps. There really can be no, as I see it, any public benefit from this private enterprise. The private enterprise has been Virginia Timberline. They have a community pier to maximize profit vis-a-vis the use of that community pier by interior lots. And so we're going to, at this point, have both community piers to serve interior lots, and if we grant permission here, we'll also have all of water view, as they call it, property owners will also have docks. So we won't have done anything in a favorable sense for the environment So when I look at 28.2.12.05, it just it seems to me that on numerous parts of it, particularly the damage to tidal wetlands, which I think will be severe with 57 wharfs, water quality, submerged aquatic life, and any other uses of state bottom in this creek in the future will be impacted. So I can't find any merit to support this application.
Further comments? Mr. Holland?
I disagree with the comments. So. I think we look at this application on its own merit. We don't assume that there's going to be 50-some other docks being built. He has a deeded easement. He has riparian rights. It's been done in the past. And I would be in favor of granting him his application as he submitted.
Further comments? Mr. Fox?
I guess I'm like some of my colleagues, I'm troubled by the cumulative impact here. I also see that in this case we have a person who has he's obtained his easement. It looks like to me he's touched all the bases that we normally require. I guess I wish there were a way we could approve his application but stop future ones. I don't know how to do that. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do.
Well,
having said that,
my concern is this, and I've got to do anything else would be hypocritical in nature. This man didn't do anything differently than what I did when I built my pier. That's what gives me the goosebumps over it. I went out and found a piece of property. I researched what needed to be done. I went and asked for an easement, received an easement, did the legal work to get the easement, got a permit, built my pier. Now, am I in an area that would lend to 50-some other piers? Absolutely not. But that would not have been my concern at the time that I applied for the pier. I was trying to do what I thought was right at the time, and I did it, and I now have one. So to now get on my soapbox and rail against development and things, which I don't mean that in a derogatory sense to my colleagues, I would think would be hypocritical in nature. When we start talking about cumulative impacts, it's a fine line between making a decision now that either sets a precedent or is arbitrary and capricious because of what might occur. Where's the balance? Where do we find that? I think cumulative impacts are to be measured on an individual basis as the individual applications come along. I think the man has crossed every T and dotted every I. I think from the interaction that I've had with staff, he's been very responsive to us and providing us what we need. And now here we are today where we are. It is a very pristine area, and everybody that knows my record the last 3 years knows that I don't like to pave paradise and put up parking lots, but at the same time, there are piers already on this creek. This is not the first pier that's going to be there. This pier is upstream of the wildlife management area where they themselves have a pier and a boat ramp. I'm inclined, if I'm given a tie vote, to vote for the project. Matters before the commission. I'm sorry. Mr. Fox and then Mr. Holland.
Can we establish the pierhead line as was perhaps suggested in the staff?
I think we can, but I think as we heard during the course of the discussion, establishment of a pierhead line, even at this point, would inhibit this applicant from doing what he wanted to do. Could we establish a pierhead line that went out somewhat further but at the same time established a line of navigation? I presume we could. But is now the time to do it with this independent application in front of us? I don't know.
I guess what I was suggesting is, can we establish a spearhead line on this waterway now that would apply to future applications?
I'd ask Mr. Grab that. Bob?
future subsequent to this one?
Subsequent to this one.
You can approve this one, you can establish a spearhead line next month. I mean, the commission's authorized to establish spearhead lines. And you could decide, as Mr. Vaughn said, it's going to be inequitable. Well, you could say the spearhead line is going to be 25 feet channel or mean low water. In his case, he might get 12 feet of water depth. Down the road, 25 feet of spearhead line might get someone 2.5 feet. So that's extremely arbitrary. We looked at it from the staff, from a standpoint that, keeping in mind that 57 piers can appear over that marsh, the mean low water mark, without the commission or the locality having any regulation at all, because private non-commercial piers that are open, piled, elevated are exempt under the wetlands ordinance. The commission has no jurisdiction over the marsh. So you could see 57 piers. If someone wanted to build a half-mile walkway, you could get it. But they'd all stop at mean low water. The easement that you've seen is a 10-foot wide easement. So could everyone put a 6-foot pier within that easement into the creek to some depth? The answer is yes. It's centrally located. You have 4 feet on either, you have 2 feet on either side of the pier if you're within the easement. So the first issue that we were dealing with was, all right, we have the easement to get to the water. What does that entail? You know, a long T-head or an L-head, boathouse, lifts, you know, exactly, you know, what are you going to get down there? Had the developer platted, and I think Mr. Riddick said they've contemplated 20 foot on either side of each easement. Don't know that you could get 40 feet on either side of every easement center line accommodated with all of the platted easements to the water. Could the developer have said, well, we're going to put one community structure in for every four houses, two on this side, two on that, one pier? Yes, there's any number of ways to get out there. What we were looking at is that, assuming that the commission wanted to grant the pier and establish a pier head line, what's reasonable? There's no need to reach 12 feet of water for a 8 or 10 foot draft fixed keel sailboat if you can't get out. So what we basically did was look at the water depth, the tidal height, and unless one came and left at storm tides, you know, you're basically restricted to the creek. So that's where we came up with the 5 foot, and basically said, if you're going to have the easements down there and you're going to have piers that are going to reach 5 feet of water, which is what the draft would reasonably be necessary to accommodate a vessel to ingress and egress from Lawrence Creek, that's what's necessary. Our feeling was that if, in fact, you had the easement, you had a T-head or an L-head, like we've seen on the eastern shore in a few places with a marginal wharf, you'd have the ability to moor on the outboard side of that, and if the pier head was at 5 feet, you'd be in 6 or 7 feet or certainly 5 feet of water. That would accommodate most uses. Would it accommodate piers on either side? Probably not. Again, depending upon your lot, unless you had a smaller John boat or something that grew something less. But we were basically, we realized the commission would be wrestling with both the precedent and establishing, you know, something and granting Mr. Vaughn a right. And what we were saying is, if in fact the reality is, whether they're built or not, if you establish one, it's going to be very difficult to deny others with similar circumstances once you get beyond mean low water. And that's where we had come up with the 5 foot. One could make it, you know, 6 foot, one could make it 8 foot. We just used 5 foot because that was at a high water access and seemed to accommodate the boats that would be, you know, utilizing the waterways. But yes, you don't have to do it now. You could do it next month. You could do it after the first 5 applications. If the concern was really cumulative impacts or carrying capacity, I'd say you really need to talk to them. Because I can't tell you today that with 5 existing piers in Surrey County, you know, with five on here, that once you get 20 boats, you're going to reach a carrying capacity. And yes, there's going to be a cumulative impact, but, you know, oftentimes, as we know, you don't realize that until you've exceeded it. You know, when you now have the damage, you now have the condemnation, you now have the impacts, you know, so it's a very inact science. We weren't recommending that you approve the first 10 that come before you. We were just saying, if you're going to approve one, you really ought to give staff or the future applicants guidance as to, you know, what's likely going to be permissible. And again, keeping in mind that you're dealing, you know, not with a half mile of walkway to get there, but you're dealing with the structures that are in the waterway.
Well, of course, we could establish the pier line, as you say, next month.
You could do whatever you want.
Don't get that opportunity very often. Mr. Holland?
Chairman, based on what I had said earlier and the fact that Mr. Vaughn has the riparian rights, he has a deed of right-of-way to the water, I would move that we grant his application as he has applied for it.
Is there a second to the motion? Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Bowden. Further discussion. Mr. Schick?
Are we going to address the pier line issue in this? Or just because he wanted it deeper than the 5 feet recommended by staff?
No, my motion is to grant his application as he applied for it.
And then deal with the pier line later.
Deal with the other lines.
I'll just go ahead and. I'm sorry, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to offer a comment. I regret that I'm not able to support the motion. I don't think the pier is being built by right, or the application is necessarily by right as a matter of law. And I think that the state's interest would be better served by denying the application and working with the developer to try to establish perhaps another community pier that would offer improved access to the area. But this is a really high-quality area in terms of its ecological value. Relatively unimpacted at this point in time. I think a better strategy would be one that would promote the use of community piers.
Mr. Tanker?
Yeah. Similarly, I agree that the easement does not really grant any inherent right of access. And I think one of the things we're going to do here, if we in fact let this pier, allow this pier, will be we're going to preclude any type of management for access. It will become a free-for-all. And I think that given the sensitivity of this natural area and the public's interest in this area, that we should err to the side of management as opposed to a laissez-faire approach.
Okay. Further comment? We'll call the roll. Mr. Bowden?
Aye.
Mr. Fox?
Oh.
Mr. Holland?
Aye.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Dr. McConaughey?
No.
Mr. Robbins?
No.
Mr. Schick?
No.
Mr. Tankard?
No.
Chair votes aye. Motion fails. Thank you very much for your presentation. Present time will be at recess for lunch. We'll reconvene at 1 o'clock.